Chapter 82. The interval before the marriage, although the enchanted house was no more, and the working world had broken into it, and was hammering and crashing and tramping up and downstairs all day long, keeping Diogenes in an incessant paroxysm of barking, from sunrise to sunset, evidently convinced that his enemy had got the better of him at last, and was then sacking the premises in triumphant defiance, there was, at first, no other great change in the method of Florence's life. At night, when the workpeople went away, the house was dreary and deserted again, and Florence, listening to their voices echoing through the hall and staircase as they departed, pictured to herself the cheerful homes to which they were returning, and the children who were waiting for them, and was glad to think that they were merry, and well pleased to go. She welcomed back the evening silence as an old friend, but it came now with an altered face, and looked more kindly on her. Fresh hope was in it. The beautiful lady who had soothed and caressed her, in the very room in which her heart had been so wrung, was a spirit of promise to her. Soft shadows of the bright life dawning, when her father's affection should be gradually won, and all, or much, should be restored, of what she had lost on the dark day, when a mother's love had faded with a mother's last breath on her cheek, moved about her in the twilight, and were welcome company. Peeping at the rosy children, her neighbors, it was a new and precious sensation to think that they might soon speak together and know each other, when she would not fear, as of old, to show herself before them, lest they should be grieved to see her in her black dress sitting there alone. In her thoughts of her new mother, and in the love and trust overflowing her pure heart towards her, Florence loved her own dead mother more and more. She had no fear of setting up a rival in her breast. The new flower sprang from the deep planted and long cherished root, she knew. Every gentle word that had fallen from the lips of the beautiful lady sounded to Florence like an echo of the voice long hushed and silent. How could she love that memory less for living tenderness, when it was her memory of all parental tenderness and love? Florence was, one day, sitting reading in her room, and thinking of the lady and her promised visit soon for her book turned on a kindred subject when, raising her eyes, she saw her standing in the doorway. "Mama!" cried Florence, joyfully meeting her. "Come again!" "Not Mama yet," returned the lady, with a serious smile, as she encircled Florence's neck with her arm. "But very soon to be," cried Florence. "Very soon now, Florence. Very soon." Edith bent her head a little, so as to press the blooming cheek of Florence against her own, and for some few moments remained thus silent. There was something so very tender in her manner, that Florence was even more sensible of it than on the first occasion of their meeting. She led Florence to a chair beside her, and sat down. Florence, looking in her face, quite wondering at its beauty, and willingly leaving her hand in hers. "Have you been alone, Florence, since I was here last?" "Oh yes." Smiled Florence, hastily. She hesitated and cast down her eyes, for her new mama was very earnest in her look, and the look was intently and thoughtfully fixed upon her face. I am used to be alone," said Florence. "I don't mind it at all. Di and I pass whole days together, sometimes." Florence might have said, "whole weeks and months." "Is Di your maid, love?"
"My dog, Mama," said Florence, laughing. "Susan is my maid."
"And these are your rooms," said Edith, looking round. "I was not shown these rooms the other day. We must have them improved, Florence. They shall be made the prettiest in the house."
"If I might change them, Mama," returned Florence. "There is one upstairs I should like much better."
"Is this not high enough, dear girl?"
Asked Edith, smiling. "The other was my brother's room," said Florence, "and I am very fond of it. I would have spoken to Papa about it when I came home and found the workman here and everything changing. But apostrophe, Florence dropped her eyes, lest the same look should make her falter again. But I was afraid it might distress him, and as you said you would be here again soon, Mama, and are the mistress of everything, I determined to take courage and ask you. Apostrophe, Edith sat looking at her, with her brilliant eyes intent upon her face, until Florence raising her own, she, in her turn, withdrew her gaze, and turned it on the ground. It was then that Florence thought how different this lady's beauty was from what she had supposed. She had thought it of a proud and lofty kind, yet her manner was so subdued and gentle that if she had been of Florence's own age and character, it scarcely could have invited confidence more. Except when a constrained and singular reserve crept over her, and then she seemed, but Florence hardly understood this, though she could not choose but notice it, and think about it, as if she were humbled before Florence, and ill at ease. When she had said that she was not her mama yet, and when Florence had called her the mistress of everything there, this change in her was quick and startling. And now, while the eyes of Florence rested on her face, she sat as though she would have shrunk and hidden from her, rather than as one about to love and cherish her, in right of such a near connection. She gave Florence her ready promise about her new room, and said she would give directions about it herself. She then asked some questions concerning poor Paul, and when they had sat in conversation for some time, told Florence she had come to take her to her own home. "We have come to London now, my mother and I," apostrophe said Edith, "and you shall stay with us until I am married. I wish that we should know and trust each other, Florence." "Apostrophe, you are very kind to me," apostrophe said Florence, "dear mama. How much I thank you. Apostrophe, let me say now, for it may be the best opportunity," apostrophe continued Edith, looking round to see that they were quite alone, and speaking in a lower voice, "that when I am married, and have gone away for some weeks, I shall be easier at heart if you will come home here. No matter who invites you to stay elsewhere. Come home here. It is better to be alone than what I would say is," apostrophe she added, checking herself, "that I know well you are best at home, dear Florence." "Apostrophe, I will come home on the very day, Mama, do so. I rely on that promise. Now, prepare to come with me, dear girl. You will find me downstairs when you are ready." Apostrophe, slowly and thoughtfully did Edith wander alone through the mansion, of which she was so soon to be the lady. And little heed took she of all the elegance and splendor it began to display. The same indomitable haughtiness of soul, the same proud scorn expressed in eye and lip, the same fierce beauty, only tamed by a sense of its own little worth, and of the little worth of everything around it, went through the grand saloons and halls that had got loose among the shady trees, and raged and rent themselves. The mimic roses on the walls and floors were set round with sharp thorns that tore her breast. In every scrap of gold, so dazzling to the eye, she saw some hateful atom of her purchase money. The broad high mirrors showed her, at full length, a woman with a noble quality, yet dwelling in her nature, who was too false to her better self, and too debased and lost, to save herself. She believed that all this was so plain, more or less, to all eyes, that she had no resource or power of self-assertion but in pride. And with this pride, which tortured her own heart night and day, she fought her fate out, braved it, and defied it. Was this the woman whom Florence, an innocent girl, strong only in her earnestness and simple truth, could so impress and quell, that by her side she was another creature, with her tempest of passion hushed, and her very pride itself subdued? Was this the woman who now sat beside her in a carriage, with her arms entwined, and who, while she courted and entreated her to love and trust her, drew her fair head to nestle on her breast, and would have laid down life to shield it from wrong or harm? Oh, Edith, it were well to die, indeed, at such a time. Better and happier far, perhaps, to die so, Edith, than to live on to the end. The Honorable Mrs. Scuton, who was thinking of anything rather than of such sentiments for, like many genteel persons who have existed at various times, she set her face against death altogether, and objected to the mention of any such low and leveling upstart that borrowed a house in Brook Street, Grosvenor Square, from a stately relative, one of the Phoenix brood, who was out of town, and who did not object to lending it, in the handsomest manner, for nuptial purposes, as the loan implied his final release and acquittance from all further loans, and gifts to Mrs. Scuton and her daughter. It being necessary for the credit of the family, to make a handsome appearance at such a time, Mrs. Scuton, with the assistance of an accommodating tradesman resident in the parish of Marylebone, who lent out all sorts of articles to the nobility and gentry, from a service of plate to an army of footmen, clapped into this house a silver-headed butler who was charged extra on that account, as having the appearance of an ancient family retainer, two very tall young men in livery, and a select staff of kitchen servants, so that a legend arose, downstairs, that Withers the page, released at once from his numerous household duties, and from the propulsion of the wheelchair inconsistent with the metropolis, had been several times observed to rub his eyes and pinch his limbs, as if he misdoubted his having overslept himself at the Leamington milkman's, and being still in a celestial dream. A variety of requisites in plate and china being also conveyed to the same establishment from the same convenient source, with several miscellaneous articles, including a neat chariot and a pair of bays, Mrs. Scuton cushioned herself on the principal sofa, in the Cleopatra attitude, and held her court in fair state. And how, apostrophe said Mrs. Scuton, on the entrance of her daughter and her charge, is my charming Florence. You must come and kiss me, Florence, if you please, my love. Apostrophe, Florence was timidly stooping to pick out a place in the white part of Mrs. Scuton's face, when that lady presented her ear, and relieved her of her difficulty. Edith, my dear, apostrophe said Mrs. Scuton, positively, I stand a little more in the light, my sweetest Florence, for a moment. Florence blushingly complied. You don't remember, dearest Edith, apostrophe said her mother, what you were when you were about the same age as our exceedingly precious Florence, or a few years younger. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I have long forgotten, mother. Apostrophe, for positively, my dear, apostrophe said Mrs. Scuton, I do think that I see a decided resemblance to what you were then, in our extremely fascinating young friend. And it shows, apostrophe said Mrs. Scuton, in a lower voice, which conveyed her opinion, that Florence was in a very unfinished state, what cultivation will do. Apostrophe, it does, indeed, apostrophe was Edith's stern reply. Her mother eyed her sharply for a moment, and feeling herself on unsafe ground, said, as a diversion, my charming Florence, you must come and kiss me once more, if you please, my love. Apostrophe, Florence complied, of course, and again imprinted her lips on Mrs. Scuton's ear. And you have heard, no doubt, my darling pet, apostrophe said Mrs. Scuton, detaining her hand, that dear papa, whom we all perfectly adore and dote upon, is to be married to my dearest Edith this day week. Apostrophe, I knew it would be very soon, apostrophe returned Florence, but not exactly when. Apostrophe, my darling Edith, apostrophe urged her mother, gaily, is it possible you have not told Florence? Apostrophe, apostrophe, why should I tell Florence? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she returned, so suddenly and harshly, that Florence could scarcely believe it was the same voice. Mrs. Scuton then told Florence, as another and safer diversion, that her father was coming to dinner, and that he would no doubt be charmingly surprised to see her, as he had spoken last night of dressing in the city, and had known nothing of Edith's design, the execution of which, according to Mrs. Scuton's expectation, would throw him into a perfect ecstasy. Florence was troubled to hear this, and her distress became so keen, as the dinner hour approached, that if she had known, How to frame an entreaty to be suffered to return home without involving her father in her explanation. She would have hurried back on foot, bareheaded, breathless, and alone, rather than incur the risk of meeting his displeasure. As the time drew near, she could hardly breathe. She dared not approach a window, lest he should see her from the street. She dared not go upstairs to hide her emotion, lest, in passing out at the door, she should meet him unexpectedly. Besides which dread, she felt as though she never could come back again, if she were summoned to his presence. In this conflict of fears, she was sitting by Cleopatra's couch, endeavoring to understand, and to reply to the bald discourse of that lady, when she heard his foot upon the stair. "I hear him now." cried Florence, starting. "He is coming." Cleopatra, who in her juvenility was always playfully disposed, and who in her self-engrossment did not trouble herself about the nature of this agitation, pushed Florence behind her couch, and dropped a shawl over her, preparatory to giving Mr. Dombey a rapture of surprise. It was so quickly done, that in a moment Florence heard his awful step in the room. He saluted his intended mother-in-law, and his intended bride. The strange sound of his voice thrilled through the whole frame of his child. "My dear Dombey," said Cleopatra, "come here and tell me how your pretty Florence is." "Florence is very well," said Mr. Dombey, advancing towards the couch. "At home?" "At home," said Mr. Dombey. "My dear Dombey," returned Cleopatra, with bewitching vivacity, "now are you sure you are not deceiving me? I don't know what my dearest Edith will say to me when I make such a declaration, but upon my honor I am afraid you are the falsest of men, my dear Dombey." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.